Welcome to the Open Up Europe podcast, the show dedicated to your journey of success in Europe. Every Tuesday at 9 a.m. Central European Time, a warm and fresh episode with an incredible entrepreneur, investor, or a thought leader will be available for your earbuds. Here is your host from Brussels, Cedar Oak.
Bonjour, bonjour, bienvenue, welcome everyone. This is the episode number 3 of Open Up Europe podcast, and here is your host Cedar speaking. Today's episode is a first in many sense, as I am hosting the first professional investor ever in Open Up Europe podcast history. And he is not just an investor, but he is also one of the most successful investors in Belgium and Europe has to offer, Frank Meine. This guy is amazing. He's a true expert in B2B investing and has accumulated more than 25 years of experience in VC in well-reputed firms like Hummingbird. He's currently leading Volta Ventures in Belgium. With his very well-connected network, he has been investing in many early-stage startups. He has invested in many successful companies all over the world, from US to Turkey to Europe, different parts, such as Çiçeksepeti, Peak Games, Clear to Pay, Avingu, and had recently a very successful exit with Engager. His past positions include former director investor in Engager, which is acquired by Clarabridge, AmpliData, which is acquired by Western Digital Corporation, Pins, acquired by IS, QLayer, acquired by Sun Microsystems, Avinity, acquired by Active Video, and Chairman in Data Center Technologies, which is acquired by Veritas Symantec. This is slightly a longer episode, but bear with me, you will love every minute of it, because it has a ton of value and lessons to learn for those who are interested in fundraising, but not only that, also in professional investing. With his network, Frank is investing in many early stage startups. So without further ado, here is Frank Meine and the third episode of Open Up Your Podcast. Enjoy. Hi, Frank. Thank you very much for accepting to be on the show.
You're very welcome. Glad to be on the show.
Congratulations once more on the exit of Engager. Could you tell us a little bit more about the whole story?
Yeah. Well, the exit was not something we had planned. It happened a little bit by accident. So at the end of last year, we were trying to raise a new round of funding. And the CEO, Volker, had spent some time with a US VC who introduced us to Clarabridge. And then Clarabridge said, well, you know, we should probably not invest. We should probably simply buy the company. So that is what happened, basically. And then the management team decided it would be probably a better thing to go to merge into a larger entity and benefit from their sales and marketing power, and like that expands quicker, more internationally. So that's what happened. We didn't seek an exit. It simply just happened. And it seemed like a good fit for both companies.
So as Volta Ventures, you invest $1 million per startup. Why $1 million? And my second question will be, what makes a company fundable for you?
Yeah. So why $1 million? We like to be the first investor, together with or just after the business angels. We'd like to be the first institutional or venture capital investor before any other bigger firms may invest. That's the strategy we have. We like to invest in seed and series A stage companies. A good amount for that is anything between 250,000 to 1 million euros. And that allows us to, you know, cut our losses if need be. The statistic is simply that if you look at venture capital also in the States, something like half or six out of 10 companies will not make it. So it's better to, you know, not spend immediately 5 or 10 million euros in a company where you know the chances are they're not going to make it. So you start with a 1 million euro investment typically. Then you see if they can reach some milestones, and then the existing investor together, ideally with other investors, invest another 3 million, another 5 million, another 10 million in four rounds of funding. And like that, you can spread the risk and also minimize dilution for the founders by means of optimizing the valuation across the different funding stages. So that's why the focus is typically 1 million. But we have to add to that that we keep a few million in the back pocket for follow-on investments. But first, we like to de-risk the company a little bit and then add a little bit more money as we go along. And then the second question, what makes a company fundable? That's the most important question probably of venture capital and startups. Well, it's first and foremost, it's the quality of the team. As they say, a good team with a bad product will always beat a bad team with a good product. It's the team, they need to be passionate, they need to be highly intelligent, they need to be a bit stubborn, they need to be experienced in their domain, and that's the type of people I like to invest in. Also, we'd like to invest in a team more than an individual. So ideally, there's two or three people that complement one another, a technical person, a commercial person, a more visionary person, and a more structured person, for example, because the two of them complement one another and help grow the business in a more structured way. So that's one. Secondly, it's the size of the addressable market. If the market is a 10 million euro market, and there's five people fighting for that market, so that's not a really interesting project for a venture capitalist. So it's the size of the market, it's understanding the problem in the market, and seeing what the product that you are building as a startup, how it may solve the issues that the current problems have in that specific market. Then we'd like to understand what the competitive positioning is, and that's probably the second most important after team is, you know, what's the competitive positioning? Who are the other players and why are you better, cheaper, faster, stronger? I don't know. We'd like to understand that in more detail. Then we need to understand what the go-to-market model is. Are you going to sell direct to your own sales team? Are you going to sell indirect through partners? This is if you're selling offline, or are you going to sell online, or are you going to do both? So we need to understand what your go-to-market strategy is going to be. I also would like to understand your revenue model. How are you going to make money? Perhaps not the first year, perhaps not the second, but ultimately one day you will need to start charging for your services or your product. What's the revenue model? Are you going to charge per download, per user, per transaction, per what? So we'd like to understand that also. I like to understand what the average deal value is and the typical profile of a typical prospect customer. Again, we know that all the assumptions that are listed are probably going to be wrong a year down the road, but we need to get a feel for where you are at today and what your type of reasoning is behind your current strategy.
What are the metrics you primarily look at when you are looking to invest in a startup?
Yeah. Well, it's a difficult one. If you're making revenue or if you have already some downloads, we'd like to see the evolution of that revenue or the downloads. If you are pre-revenue, then we'd like to understand how many people did you speak to about your product? How many people are ready to start a trial or participate in a beta testing? If you don't have a product, then it's really difficult, of course, to issue any metrics whatsoever. So then we really have to go for faith in the team.
You always give lots of great advices in the events you attend, but there is one you repeatedly emphasize for the entrepreneurs. Take a sales training. Why is that?
Yeah. Well, if you are a business owner, everything you do hinges around sales, because you need to sell to your landlord, you need to sell your business and your vision to your employees and your candidate employees, you need to sell that vision to your potential investors, you need to sell it to your prospective customers. So you need to be able to, you know, go away from the technical things in your product towards the vision, the return on investment. You also need to learn how to qualify where you spend your time on. And you learn these things in sales training. You learn to ask qualifying questions to see, is this really something, someone who I should spend more time on or not? So you need to qualify people in and also qualify them quickly out so that you don't waste too much time. Also, selling and marketing is a process, so you need to learn what the process typically is. You need to be disciplined, and that's something that people need to learn sometimes. That's why I typically advise them to follow a sales training. most people in Europe, when they start a business, have more of a technical background. Their immediate instinct is to talk about the features in their product. They shouldn't be doing that. They should be talking about the vision for the product, the return on investment, competitive positioning, the value proposition, the good things it can bring to their customers. These are things you learn in the sales training.
Yeah, after all, you could have the best product in the world, but that doesn't mean anything if you cannot convert it to sales, right?
Absolutely.
Okay, so what I wonder is, how early is too early for a founder to come to a VC?
Yeah. The better your CV is, the earlier you can come talk to a VC. It's that simple. If you've done it before, or if it's clear that you're super smart, super driven, super passionate, and that you've been able to recruit already a great team, then probably 10 or 15 slides will probably be okay to go talk to a VC. If you're just out of or still in university, zero experience, you're just two or three people, it's going to be more tricky. So then we would expect the people to have a little bit more of proof that they can really deliver. So it depends on the, you know, the background of the people. Like, for example, when Jürgen Ingels and Michel Akkermans raised their first round of funding for Clear2Pay, the only thing they had was 10 or 12 or 15 slides. But these guys were truly onto something with a track record, with knowledge in their sector, so it was an easier thing to do.
Then does that mean that a person with a great CV and a great idea can already come to you?
Well, the idea, we cannot invest in ideas. We need to invest, like the reply to your previous questions, what do they need to bring? They need to bring me an idea of the market, the competition, the team, the go-to-market model, the revenue model, the execution, that type of stuff. So that's way more than just a idea. So an idea, unfortunately, we can do nothing with that.
So, okay, the hands are shaken and the champions are drunk. What's next for the founder then?
Yeah. So the typical relationship officially is that a typical VC will assume a board seat on the board of directors of the company together with the management team and the founders initially. In practice, what any good VC and definitely an early stage VC should be doing is helping the management team. Helping them in, for example, corporate structuring. They're busy developing their product, developing their customer base. They're not too worried about structuring a board. They're less worried about, you know, creating a stock option pool, making that EIP agreements with the developers are well structured. These are things that a good VC assisted with perhaps a lawyer can easily do. What a good VC also is supposed to be doing is helping recruit people for the team. A VC that has been active for a while is supposed to have a good network of salespeople, technical people, VP sales, finance people that they can bring to the table, present to the management team of the startup when they want to hire new people. So it should also be a headhunter in a way and help in recruitment. I suppose our role is also to help companies being introduced at prospects, at larger companies where they may be doing a trial or perhaps sell their product to. We have worked with other companies and with larger companies before. It's sometimes easier for us to give a call or send an email to a large corporate and ask for an introduction so that they can meet one of the startups. It's probably easier for us in certain regards than some of the startups. So also helping in sales and marketing situations. And then everything that's needed to raise the next round of funding, because we're a seed stage investor. After us, there's going to be two or three more rounds of funding. I think it's one of our roles also to help the entrepreneur raising the next round of funding, helping them in the pitch, helping them in securing meetings with international VCs, and helping them negotiate a new investment plan with those new VCs.
Talking about the VCs over the other side of the ocean, since you have a lot of experience over there too, how do you compare the entrepreneurship here in Europe and over there in Silicon Valley?
Are you enjoying European startup conversations? Do you want to see it continue? Your feedback is the best way to do it. Head over to iTunes and leave us a review. That means a lot.
How do you compare the entrepreneurship here in Europe and over there in Silicon Valley?
Well, not too bad. When we started, I started this in the year 2000, 15 years ago already. And then people were not as experienced. The gap between here and Silicon Valley was pretty big. It's going to be impossible to close the gap because Silicon Valley is, yeah, well, it's a few million people only active in IT. But the gap has closed dramatically. We're getting pretty close. Life has changed. There's blog people can read, there's conferences. There's people that have exited a business already. Are you still there? There's companies that have exited already. There are plenty of business angels now in Belgium who can help startups. There's plenty of incubators now in Belgium. Every city in Belgium has an incubator. There's more money. There are business angels who can spend money. Even the government is doing everything they can to stimulate entrepreneurships and stimulate startups. So we're in a much, much, much better space than we were 10 or 15 years ago.
Do you believe that Belgian tech entrepreneurship and private equity is still in a bubble?
Well, I think that the Belgian entrepreneurship today has reached a certain level where, you know, we can't speak about a bubble. I think we've reached a certain plateau below which I don't believe we're going to go anymore. There has been a bubble in 1999-2000, a huge bubble. But I think this has meat on the bone. We're seeing young people and repeat entrepreneurs starting businesses. We didn't have repeat entrepreneurs in 2000 in internet and software because everybody was a first timer basically at the time. So we see repeat entrepreneurs and young people being really motivated and knowledgeable, way more knowledgeable than in the past, to start a new business. They read the blogs, they attend incubators, they attend conferences, they go to the States. They learn, they're way more experienced and knowledgeable than they used to be a few years ago. So in that regard, I think we created a good groundwork, related groundwork, for more interesting companies to come. In the beginning of the year, in internet and software, Engager was exited, for example, Amplidata, Cartagena, and I'm forgetting a few more. So there's been a lot of activity also in the exit market. And all those companies that were exited all have kept their team intact and were even allowed to grow their team by the acquirer because, you know, our Belgian engineers are as good as the ones that they can find in the valley.
Yeah, so talking about bubbles, what were the highs and lows of the VC life during your long experience?
There's many. Like, for example, 9/11. After 9/11, I don't know how many companies failed, or after 2008, because there was no follow-on funding available anymore in the market. So that was something external to anybody. People couldn't help it. If after 2008 you were active in selling software to banks, it was tricky in 2009 and 2010. So these are things you basically can do a little about as an entrepreneur. It's underestimating the quality and the strength of your competition. It's at the end of the day, most of the time, it's the quality of the team, that was not as high as initially hoped for, or failing to attract the right people to complement the existing founding team. And I see that as often as a challenge. I see people in the Valley spending more time on recruitment than people over here. So I think people should spend a little bit more time in recruiting the best people to increase the quality of the team. And that's why we also put in money in a company, because 70% of the expenditure of an internet and software startup is people, is salaries. So we'd like to hire the best. It's better to hire an expensive, more seasoned person than sometimes hiring two kids that still need to learn the job. Sometimes, not always.
What do you think about the culture? I mean, the culture of acceptance of failure between Europe and US.
Yeah. Well, again, the gap is closing between Europe and the Valley, absolutely. But there is still a bigger acceptance of failure than there is here. But again, we're getting better in that regard over here. In the States, people consider failing a learning lesson, a learning experience. So that people think, well, they're going to be smarter next time around. So it's better to invest in these guys now because they have made their mistakes already. And now they have learned and they're going to be probably better entrepreneurs and managers for it. But in the startup landscape, I see that attitudes changing. It's not lethal anymore. If you set up a startup and it failed, it's not the problem that it used to be. But I also recommend, but the other thing that you see is also that younger people start doing startups, even at university. You know, nobody cares what you do until you're 25, 28. So if you do a few startups and they fail, you know, nobody is going to hold that against you. On the contrary, when you start another company, you're going to be way more smarter.
So you advise young people from universities, even from high schools, to go out there and try their hands, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And if it doesn't work out, it's not too big of a problem. They're still living at home with mom and dad. They don't have a mortgage and two. So they can try and make a mistake and learn and become smarter. And most young guys that start a business have done something in the background where they were at university, successfully or not successfully. Most of them, you know, that entrepreneurship is typically displayed in other ways.
And well, how do you pitch to investors?
So when I pitch to an investor in the fund or to another investor in one of my startups?
Both, actually.
Yeah. Well, it's two completely different styles, but at the end of the day, it's the same process. You need to be really disciplined about the process. So if you want to raise funding, and if you want to, you know, for us, we raised a few millions of funding, but if a startup wants to raise €1 million in funding, you know, they're probably going to have to talk to 20 or 30 people before one of them is going to say, okay, I'll do it. So, and that's also something you learn in sales, in a sales training. You know, you need to contact quite a few people and move them to some sort of a funnel of, yeah, they see, I have had the first meeting, but yeah, it didn't work out. Yes, I've had the second meeting. So they've called a few of my prospects. Oh, they sent me a term sheet. So you need to go through that process and try to move the 30 people, as many as possible, into, you know, getting them to a term sheet and ultimately getting them to sign a investment agreement with you. And that's a process that anybody that is looking to raise funding, whatever type of funding, should be more disciplined about. Secondly, if you want to go raise funding, it's going to take a lot of time to do it. There are no miracles. It took us for Volta over a year, full time, to raise the fund. It's going to take any startup 9 months, at least 25% of their time, to raise funding. You need to hone your PowerPoint presentation. You need to do presentations at startup events. You need to talk to the press. You need to talk to many potential investors who are going to ask you for second and third meetings, who are going to ask you to go talk to this guy and that guy, who's going to ask you to do some sort of analysis and create some an Excel for an analysis for something. Negotiate the deal, then doing your due diligence. This takes time. And some people here are a little bit naive sometimes about this. It's very time consuming raising funding. And if you want to go raise funding, you need to set aside a lot of time to do it properly. If you feel you're less disciplined or it's less needed to go raise the funding, don't waste time on it. There's other things you could do with your life, basically.
So you advise entrepreneurs to have a buffer before starting to think that they will raise funding to compensate themselves, etc.
Correct. And the buffer is, you know, probably the best buffer is making some revenue on doing a project on the side in the domain that you're trying to build a product on. Doing some consulting or some development work that pays the bills in the sector that you're trying to build your product in.
So you have more than 20 years experience in the space.
No, 15 years, 10 years, a dozen years as an entrepreneur in internet and software companies, and then 15 years in venture capital.
How did you decide to be a VC yourself?
Good question. Well, I had worked as a sales executive, sales manager, CEO of smaller companies in the Benelux, moved to the Valley in 1999-2000 during the bubble. Learned a lot how the American startups and venture capital community operates, came back to Belgium in this year of 2000, and I really wanted to do something in working with multiple startups, not just one. I wanted to work with multiple, and the best way to do that was become a VC. And we were very lucky. I bumped into another Belgian guy who had spent 5 years in Boston, and together we were very fortunate to very quickly raise a bit of money for our fund and start Big Bang Ventures at the time. Again, luck also plays a role. If you had come back from the States half a year later, the bubble had burst in the meantime, and I don't believe you would have raised any money at all in those days. So if I had come back later, we would probably not be talking, and I would most likely not be VC today.
Then what is a good time and a bad time for you?
Well, the good times are the times when you see that your companies are doing well. They're meeting the plan, they're raising money, they're exiting. Then those are good times. The bad times is when you see that one of your darlings, one of the companies you invested in, is not working out as expected. And it seems like they're running out of money and a few of them go bankrupt. So those are sad days. What we do has some sort of a correlation with how the stock market is doing. Like after the bubble burst in the bubble of 1999-2000 burst, it were dark times in 2002-2005. It was really difficult to find customers who had money to pay for your services. And it was very difficult to find follow-on funding because there were basically no VCs left to do follow-on funding. So those are difficult times. If you then manage as a VC to raise your next round of funding, you raise your next funds basically and invest in a few companies that seem to be doing well, those are up times. So you go along with the stock exchange, with the NASDAQ, and you go along with how your companies are doing, basically. If they're doing well, you're happy. If they're not doing well, you're not so happy.
And what happens when a company goes bad? I mean, what do you do with them?
Well, we need to try and identify why they're not doing very well. Are we betting on the wrong jockey, are we betting on the wrong horse? We need to ask these hard questions. Very often it's the horse. By horse I mean, you know, the product. Sometimes it's the jockey, you know, the management team. So the the founders team, yeah, and the management team, yeah. So sometimes it doesn't work out. They failed to hire the right people to complement their own expertise. And that is sometimes a challenge. Often it's simply the product that there's more competition than we had expected. There is the problem in the market is not as important as we thought it was, and companies are not willing to pay for the product as much as we expected them to be willing to pay. So that's, you know, starting with the wrong assumption. It's again also stock markets and the economic climate. If it's good, it's easy to sell. If the climate is bad, it's more difficult to sell a product. So there's many reasons why things may go.
All right, so we are going to wrap up now. So what would be your latest advices for entrepreneurs of Europe to gain a competitive edge and raise funding?
Well, it's selling. It's going out and talking to as many people as possible. In the States, they even spend time with competitors. People have lunches. Competitors have lunches. Here in Belgium, they don't do that, and I advise to do it, so that you can better understand how you are different, so you can better position your product in a certain specific project. So it's go out and talk to as many prospects as possible to learn what, if the problem that you think is a problem is also a problem for them, that they would be willing to pay some money for. And very often that is simply wrong. So go out and talk to prospects as early as possible. Make a slide deck, make a presentation with your assumptions, and test them with prospects, and see if your assumptions are correct. And based on those things, then start building your product, and you will see that, you know, that's also one of the differences between the Americans and the Europeans. The American will first make a PowerPoint presentation and go out and talk to as many people as possible, and in a second stage, build the product based upon the feedback they received. Typical engineers will go into a room, lock themselves up for a year, build a product, go out, and then say, damn, this is not what the market was looking for. So we need, what we like to do is, in fact, mix that. The good of the European engineers, you know, building great products, with the Americans doing the pitching and the marketing and the sales and the trials way, way, way earlier. Try to combine that better and grow the businesses more successfully in this way.
Thank you so much, Frank. It has been an absolute pleasure to talk to you and have you on the show.
Thanks a lot, Sida. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Dank u wel for listening to the third episode of Open Up Europe podcast with Frank Meine. If you are interested in pitching him, visit Volta Ventures website on www.volta.ventures. I repeat, www.volta.ventures, and send him your presentation deck. I would also like to thank all of you who have reviewed our podcast on iTunes and made us the top podcast featured in the new and noteworthy section. It's a great honor for me, and please let me know about your opinion. Who would you like to rather see in the next episodes? You can either respond on the website to the post, www.openupeurope.com/OUE03. I repeat, www.openupeurope.com/OUE03, or using the contact form on the website. Peace out.
Thank you for listening to the Open Up Europe podcast. For the resources mentioned in this episode and the transcript, go to our website on www.openupeurope.com. And don't forget to sign up for email lists. We are also on Twitter and Facebook with the same handle, Open Up Europe.